Hello and welcome to another episode of In Conversation With, a podcast for the Lancet Infectious Diseases. I am Dr. Saliha Hassan, a senior editor for the journal, and I'm joined by Professor Stefan Niemann, who is the head of the Molecular and Experimental Microbacteriology Group at the Research Center Bostel and co-head of the National Reference Center for Microbacteria. We are also joined by Dr. Sophia Vegas, who is the Deputy General Director at the Instituto Nacional de Saúde, INS, Mozambique, and researcher in the field of tuberculosis and lab diagnosis. We will be discussing their study, Emergence of Bediquilin-Resistant TB and of MDR-XDR Mycobacterium Tuberculosis Strains with RPOB I491F mutation not detected by expert MTB-RIF in Mozambique, a retrospective observational study, and its wider implications for drug-resistant TB and the fight to end TB. This paper can be found online at thelancet.com. Hello and welcome, Dr. Vegas and Professor Niemann. Thank you so much for joining me today. We have a lot of questions to go through, so let's start the discussion and dive straight into it. Dr. Vegas, to initiate this conversation, could you please explain the XDR-MDR TB situation globally, and particularly in Africa at present?
Hello, Dr. Sayanda, and thank you so much for inviting us for this talk about our work in the field of molecular epidemiology and drug resistance of TB in Mozambique. It's a pleasure and an honor to participate. Thank you so much. So going to your question, it's important to mention that TB is a bacterial infectious disease treatable with a long course of antibiotics for a minimum of 4 to 6 months. So if a patient does not complete the full course of treatment, stops taking the medication, or does not take the prescribed doses consistently, it creates conditions for some TB bacteria to survive and potentially develop resistance. Other reasons for resistant development can be related to poor quality medication, inadequate diagnosis. But transmission of strains that are already drug resistant is the main driver of the TB, of the drug resistant TB epidemic. And based on the level of resistance, drug-resistant TB can be classified into several categories. So I will first talk about multi-drug-resistant TB or MDR-TB, which are strains that are resistant to at least isoniazid and rifampicin, two of the most powerful first-line TB drugs. So if an MDR strain is also resistant to any fluoroquinolone or at least one additional group A drug, it is called extensively the drug-resistant TB or XDR-TB. So in between MDR and XDR, there is the pre-XDR-TB. So pre-XDR-TB strains, MDR strains that are also resistant to any fluoroquinolone. So you also asked me about numbers. So in terms of proportion, globally, it is estimated that the prevalence of MDR-TB is of 3.6% in new TB cases and 18% in cases that were previously treated for TB. In Africa, the MDR incidence is of 77,000 and in Mozambique is of 4,800. For XDR, globally, the prevalence is of 2.5%. And in Mozambique, we have reported 54 cases in 2021. So diagnosis of MDR-TB has challenges, even with the rollout of molecular rapid tests, such as the MTB, the gene expert MTB-RIF. Access is still challenging, and this can be related to several reasons, including sample transportation, equipment maintenance, availability of testing reagents, and others. So only 1/3 of all individuals estimated to have MDR-TB globally, they will be effectively diagnosed and receive appropriate treatment. unfortunately, the ones that are not diagnosed will suffer poor outcomes and have high mortality and contribute to the ongoing transmission of MDR tuberculosis.
Thank you so much, Dr. Vegas, for a great introduction. For our listeners, Professor Neiman, we'd also like to know what type of drug bedaquiline is and how is it incorporated in drug regimens for the treatment of MDR and rifampicin-resistant TB?
So bedaquiline is a diarrheal quinoline that inhibits ATB generation of Mycobacterium tuberculosis strains. So the activity derives from inhibition of a proton pump of the mycobacterial ATPase, and that because this is a critical enzyme for M. tuberculosis, the inhibition then leads to bacterial death. So bedaquiline is part of the all oral-only regimens used currently for MDR or rifampicin-resistant tuberculosis treatment regimens, and other drugs in combination are pretomidine, linezolid, or moxifloxacin or other quinolones. Overall, if you consider success rates, this regimen, so the introduction of the new regimens has been quite successful, increasing the success rates of up to 75% and 89%, which has been reported for this all-oral bedaquiline-containing regimens. So the first evidence that these regimens work in a six-month time frame was obtained in a trial that was called NIX-TB trial. And indeed, this regimen can be prolonged to more than 9 months in patients with delayed culture conversions. And overall, the studies indicate that favorable outcomes using these regimens were achieved in 90% of the patients, with most culture conversions occurring within the first 2 months of therapy. So it was quite a dramatic change compared to older regimens. The newest regimen is called BPAL-M. So it's a combination of bedaquiline, pretomidine, linezolid, and moxifloxacin for only 6 months, even in HIV-positive patients, is based on the trial that was called TB Practical. And that's the current regimen that the WHO has released.
Thank you so much, Professor Neiman. I'd like to now move on to your study. So could you please explain your study design and the key methodologies that you used?
So it was a retrospective study based on rifampicin-resistant Mycobacterium tuberculosis complex strains that were stored at the National Tuberculosis Reference Laboratory in Maputo between years 2015 and 2021. So we worked with these strains. They were recultured, DNA was extracted, and then we did full genome sequencing to understand which phylogenetic lineages, so what strain types are circulating in the country. And then we used this information also to look into drug resistance predictions. So from the genome, we could translate the information into drug resistances that are present in certain strains. And we used additionally this information to define transmission, potentially transmission and outbreak clusters, so to say. And that is based on a distance in the genome of between two strains of below 12 SNPs or variants in the full genome.
Thank you. Dr. Vegas, could you please highlight the key findings of your study with particular emphasis on the RPOB1491F mutation that was found? What do your findings actually mean for the efforts to effectively diagnose and treat multidrug-resistant rifampicin-resistant TB in high-burden countries such as Mozambique?
Thank you. So we found that 21% of the rifampicin-resistant strains were already resistant to fluoroquinolones, and that the prevalence of bedaquiline resistance increased from 3% in 2016 to 14% in 2021. So those are two very important finds that I would like to highlight before moving to the I941F mutation strains. Those strains, they have the non-canonical rifampicin resistant conferrin mutation. This mutation is not detected by common commercially available diagnostic tests, such as the expert anti-B review. So such strains are reported as rifampicin susceptible, but in fact, they are rifampicin resistant. In our study, we found that a high proportion of MDR and with bedaquiline resistance and XDRs in Mozambique are due to the strains with this particular mutation. And based on phylogeny analysis, we also found a very close relationship of these strains with the I491F mutation, have a very close relationship with the strains from neighboring countries, in particular from South Africa and Eswatini, confirming cross-border migration and transmission. So in the WHO approved 6 months regimens for MDR treatment, pertonamide should be used in combination with bedaquiline and lenalidomide for 26 months. The problem is that this particular strain with this mutation already associated with MDR and bedaquiline resistant and also with XDR, they are already circulating in country. And since rifampicin resistance will not be detected by the available diagnostic tests, people are unlikely to be diagnosed with rif-resistant TB. And this will result in inadequate treatment with first-line TB drugs, treatment failure, and ongoing transmission. So even among people with failed TB treatment, accurate diagnosis is likely to be delayed as the current testing algorithm recognizes the use of phenotypic DST in those cases. And it requires some time, it is time consuming. So given the current diagnostic algorithm, both the emergence of reef resistance due to I491F mutation and bedaquiline resistance may threaten MDR-TB prevention and care unless technologies as sequencing-based technologies are used, are rolled out to allow ongoing monitoring of resistance development.
Thank you so much. Professor Niemann, your findings clearly suggest that resistance to bedaquiline is increasing over time. So how alarmed should we exactly be? And how does this impact the whole commitment of ending TB globally by 2030?
Well, that's a good question. Our study is an alarm signal, and we urgently need data also from other regions of the world to see if similar developments are occurring. So we need to understand the magnitude of the problem and also define reasons why there is such a rapid resistance development, even in patients with strains that are susceptible to other core drugs, such as fluoroquinolones. And this information should then be directly used to develop mechanisms or tools, alternative treatment regimens to stop resistance development and prevent the potential loss of the first highly potent newly developed antibiotic for tuberculosis in the last 40 years. But if this development cannot be stopped, resistance development to bedaquiline may occur worldwide and make the use of the BPAL regimen a very risky strategy. And this is in particular true if we consider that we see that this emerges in the absence of other drug resistances. And I think one major point here is that the regimen is widely used without having any possibilities for drug resistance testing. And this is also an illustration on how modern tools like genome sequencing can be used for pathogen surveillance and can lead to findings one would normally not really get very rapidly.
The next question, Dr. Vega, says that your sequencing data in the paper shows high levels of clustering. Can you explain to our readers what this means in terms of transmission?
If at least two strains, they have the same genomic pattern, they will form a cluster. And the proportion of clustered strains have increased in our study from 42 among reef resistance to 78 in MDRs, 94 in MDRs with bedaquiline resistance, the sole in pre-XDRs, and 96 among XDR strains, pointing towards increasing transmission by drug resistance category. This high cluster rate among resistant strains indicates that the exact same strain is causing the epidemic in each drug resistance category, suggesting person-to-person transmission rather than independent resistance emergence within patients. Mozambique borders in the south with South Africa and with Eswatini. And the phylogenetic analysis combining strains from Eswatini, South Africa, and Mozambique, as I mentioned, shows a very close relation, genetic relationship of the I491F strains that were investigated. And this points clearly towards cross-border migration and transmission between these countries. We found bedaquiline resistance in 2015, before the introduction of this drug in Mozambique, indicating a possible importation of strains with bedaquiline resistance from other countries that are already using this drug. But of course, this needs further investigation.
Thank you so much. I'd like to end a very insightful conversation with a question to both of you, actually. How can this problem of emerging bedaquiline resistance be tackled? And what are the future directions of your work? Do you have any clinical trials or studies that are planned by your groups in the future? And Dr. Vegas, you can start.
I would maybe say that tracking MDR resistance needs a multisectorial approach. So everybody has to be involved in this big fight. But from our side, I would say that continuous high-quality surveillance using next-generation sequencing is needed to monitor the evolving of bedaquiline and fluoroquinolone resistance, combining diagnosis and surveillance with novel strategies, for example, with focus in cross-border travel and high-risk groups. We will disseminate our results in-country and raise awareness among stakeholders, healthcare providers, about the risks of drug resistance and the erasing of I491F strains. We are also working to establish local capacity for whole genome sequencing at INS in Mozambique. So a training is planned for next month. And we are also working with the NTB to revise the national testing algorithm to include next generation sequencing. And we are also, of course, continuing with our work of prospective surveillance of drug-resistant tuberculosis.
Professor Nguyen, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, so in a general context, very limited resources exist in virtually every country in Africa, but also in other high-incidence settings to test for resistance to bedaquiline and linezolid and protonamid and other like newly coming drugs, despite the fact that these drugs are now widely used. So in my view and in our view in general, the rollout of drug susceptibility testing and inclusion of this in treatment algorithms is crucial. And I must also say that in future, my opinion is that any new drug should be rolled out only in parallel with the capacity of resistance testing and linked with local and global surveillance or drug resistance emergence. It's also crucial to understand mechanisms of resistance development and to define characteristics of patients at risk for treatment failure. Because on the one hand, we know that better clean treatment or the new regimens that have been rolled out are beneficial for a substantial number of patients that now switch to a completely new treatment regimen with no injectables in very short time. So that's a very good development. However, there is a current proportion of patients, and recent studies show that failed regimens and develop first, obviously, better clean resistance. So we need to know what the basis for this is, what are the characteristics of these patients, and how we can develop strategies to avoid that resistance development, and then, of course, also the transmission of resistant bacteria. I think that's one major other challenge. So how can we effectively stop drug-resistant tuberculosis transmission? And there is quite a number of interventions. So we need to fight cases early on. We need to do the right diagnostics and then put them on effective regimens, but most likely we'll also need to have separations of patients to avoid transmission in communities for quite a long time. So the final word is what we see currently arising from active cases is most likely only the tip of the iceberg of the real drug-resistant tuberculosis epidemic, because quite a high number of people are infected with drug-resistant tuberculosis, but not yet disease. So there is a kind of time bomb that we also need to tackle and stop in future.
Thank you. And would you like to shed some more light on what studies or trials your group has planned in the future?
So I may start with that. So we are doing capacity building and support for implementing modern tools for diagnostics in, for example, in Mozambique, but also in neighboring countries like Eswatini and Namibia. And as a supranational reference laboratory of the WHO, we are also supporting countries in Eastern Europe that have high levels of drug resistance to establish new techniques for detecting second-line drug resistances. This is all going in line with databases for the interpretation of these data sets to translate that into the clinic. And we are also doing, with quite a number of partners, transmission studies, meaning molecular epidemiological studies, to understand what is really ongoing into the field. And that is a particular pleasure to work with INS and Sophia's team, and also with other countries. So we also strengthen South-South collaborations. So we will, as Sophia already said, we will have a big training workshop next week that also includes the national TB programs, that also includes clinicians, so that they understand how the new technologies can be used in future.
Thank you so much for such an insightful discussion, Dr. Vegas and Professor Naiman. You can read the paper that we discussed today on thelancet.com. Thanks for listening, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your regular podcasts from.